welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And as we continue to learn, I've said for years and years, it is such a blessing having family in our lives. And nine times out of ten, you know, with our, you know, our church friends and associates and our family and so forth, these are the relationships that usually are centered around, you know, your faith. And so very few people, other than maybe clergy, have an affinity and a tie and a relationship with what they do day to day. I'm sure that every one of us has remembered that student in school, junior high school, what have you, or even younger, that were disciples of their faith and, you know, ambassadors in the school trying to help people see, you know, the beauty of their faith. And we've seen that in some workplaces and so forth. But nine times out of ten, we as a society have kind of removed that. And in conversations that I've had, I've stated this before, that a lot of times when you are in tune, you have the opportunity of receiving inspiration, guidance, and or revelation, whatever you want to call it. And many times that happens when, you know, you are working in your faith. And nine times out of ten, when you're working in your faith, you usually work with your family and those associates that share that faith. A lot of times we don't bring that to work. A lot of times we don't bring that to where, you know, the divine hand kind of helps guide us. Now, in this line of work, I have noticed lots of people that do that, and I notice that those who are, you know, in tune, they become those who, you know, because you hear me say, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And as I look, those people, nine times out of ten, who are in tune, are reasonable people. Now, the interesting thing is, they may not be equally informed, but because they're in tune, and you know, as a friend Woody would say, humble, then that means that they are in tune. So when they hear something that is, wow, they've never heard that before, the spirit, while they're in tune, you know, kind of testifies one way, burning in the bosom. There's different ways of manifesting it, and we all have our different, you know, sensitivities of how, oh, wow, you know, that just hit me right there in that spot, whatever that spot is. And so when we do these things, if we do them to put in his hands, like when you're having to lecture a child, I mean, many times the times we become overcome by that inspiration is literally when the you know, we have to say something. I mean, it's not we're prepared to, it's because that child just did something and the peril that they put themselves in, your child, the peril that they put themselves in, you feel so moved to impress upon them the dangers that they just put themselves in, you know, especially when it's real evil dangers, what have you. And so it's a real blessing to see those things manifest themselves in our lives. Now, I'm only saying this because I look over the almost 2,000 episodes I've created on Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio. Some of them on, you know, other stations and doing other, you know, spots and so forth. The reality is as we look at the opportunities and what we're doing, when we create a script, when we're sitting down and working and it becomes our work, a lot of times the pride in authorship keeps and closes our mind on what we really need to be, you know, saying or doing. So that's one of the reasons why I kind of lay out a plan. You know, I may have a bullet or two or a couple of bullets. I want to make sure I bring these things up and just let it flow. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, because I'm not an entertainer. A lot of people just, you know, they're not entertained by my orations. They're not entertained by the content, because they want to hear these sound bites. They, you know, because we're all so possessed by the porn cycle of news. And it truly is a porn cycle, because it is, you know, literally, you know, blood, guts, sex, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's all in the news. And it is shocking how insensitive we've become to those things. But that's an indictment for the sign of our times. As I prepare, I know there's lots of people that prepare their shows and so forth, and they do great shows. They're very entertaining shows. They're really well thought out. Me, not so much. You know, it's not that I well think, you know, I'm not thinking out what I want to do, cover, or so forth. And I actually let the content flow itself and let the inspiration flow from that. But today, in moving into the third day of this shaking, the shaking of the Department of Justice and the White House, we have to shake them. We have to get their attention to look to the Constitution. Quit looking at your professional education, your experience in the court system. We have all been ensconced in the perversion of our government. When we talk about the supreme law of the land, we have to truly understand actually what that means. When we all understand that what is in that Constitution is the supreme law of the land. How many people include all of the amendments to that Constitution, whether you like it or not, until you can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt? The only way we're going to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt what amendments or what parts of the Constitution were not properly ratified. And technically, the original 13 states ratified the entire Article 1 through Section 7, as well as the Bill of Rights. Enough of them have been ratified. Whether it's unanimous on the Bill of Rights or not, doesn't matter. What matters is three-fourths of the states bought into all of the amendments. The only way we're going to be able to say, oh, the 17th and 16th Amendments did not properly ratify, is through an audit. In other words, we have to conduct republic review for you to actually get, aha, see, I was right. Those were not legitimate amendments. The point isn't whether they're legitimate or not. The point is whether there is a boogeyman in those amendments or not. Because those two amendments, the way they have been executed and the way they're being functioned or operated today, the operations of, you know, that behavior of, i.e. the taxation or the Senate not giving the states their suffrage, those are all in violation of the Constitution and the amendment itself. In other words, there's really no boogeyman in the 16th or the 17th Amendment. And there's definitely no boogeyman in the 14th Amendment. And the only way, before we start seeing, I don't buy into that, doesn't matter whether you do or not. It has been ratified. It has been proven satisfactorily to some point or another. And the question is, what is the real problem with those amendments? If you can prove in the debates on how that amendment was sold by the opponents that, you know, the 17th Amendment literally did take away the state suffrage, if you believe that, then... there's no point in me arguing with you, because I don't think I'd ever be able to get through to you. Because if you don't understand the Constitution and where the guarantee for suffrage for the state legislature is, then, you know, and you think it's in the 17th Amendment, because the 17th Amendment only touched Article 1. And just basically the appointment and the replacement. It had nothing to do with state suffrage. So the state suffrage never got touched out of the Constitution. It never got removed. The guarantee that the Senate, those senators, would represent their state legislature, that never got removed. Ah, it's the same thing with the 16th, and this is the same thing with the 14th. What are the problems that you're saying are there? And show me in the debates in Congress how that's exactly how they framed what that section meant. 9 times out of 10, what people are actually regurgitating are redefinitions that have come from the courts. So as we dive into content and so forth, I'm hoping that you do your due diligence and actually read how the Constitution was framed. That's why we go through the ratification debates. When we look at the amendments, you have to look at how that amendment was sold in its original form. As it was debated in Congress by the proponents, those who were in favor thereof, then that are the terms, those are the terms and definitions of what the intent of that constitutional amendment was. Don't tell me otherwise. So until you can bring up the proponents and said, oh yeah, that's exactly what they said, the 14th Amendment made you chattel. You became a subject to, you know, this government, to the corporation. That language is not in the 14th Amendment debates. It's just not there, folks. You know, it may be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages you got to read, but you're not going to find it. You may find the opponents making those assertions, but that doesn't make it so. Just like when James Mason made assertions that the exclusive legislation was going to allow the federal government legitimately to churn a black cauldron of evil power. I mean, that's just hyperbole. And we get caught up in the hyperbole. Stop it. Let's deal with the facts. Let's deal with the actual definitions, and let's work together in getting this framework back the way it was. And so this is why we have to be very accurate in how we address to shake the White House and to shake the Department of Justice. The key thing in the Constitution that will make the difference in this nation immediately are the 3 points of accountability. Ah, what are those? What are the 3 points of accountability? The oath of office. Every person in public service must take an oath. And in that oath, they must swear or affirm that they will support the Constitution. We say support, we mean actively support. It doesn't mean, oh, well, I'm not going to do bad. I'm going to vote properly. But that's all I'm going to do. No. In supporting means when something is attacking the Constitution, or a politician or a party is trying to pass agendas that are inviolate to the Constitution, then those people under oath are all to attack that party, that group, that paradigm, and say that is unconstitutional, and because you're doing this, we're removing you from office. Because let's make the dots now. You got the oath of office, you have the accountability, where these people who are under oath to support it are actually supposed to be the combatants enforcing and holding accountability of each other, but they're not doing that. They've created what we call honor among thieves. So we have this right in the First Amendment to petition our government, which means we're to petition our legislators, because we're a legislative government. We're not a judiciary. We're not a court system. The court system is there to support the law and to make sure that the law has been abided by, but they can't create law. They can't redefine law. They only try law on law and facts. They only try cases on law and facts. The executive only, we don't have kings, we don't have monarchs, we're not supposed to have despots. We have a executive who ensures that the law will be properly enforced as defined, to accurately enforce the law, the legitimate law, not the color of law. This is why the president could actually do all sorts of great things. a constitutional. I did that series of what a constitutional president could do in 13 shows, 13 hours if you listen to it. But in this particular case, we've got to shake the White House because they have everything they need in that Constitution to hold everybody accountable, including the Supreme Court, including every member of Congress, and including every rogue politician out in the states and beyond. If they are under oath to support that Constitution of the United States, for the United States of America, be more specific, to support the Constitution for the United States of America, that's the original text, not the annotated Constitution. The annotated Constitution is an abomination. Bottom line, we have to shake. We have to shake the tree vigorously. And I say that because as everybody is applauding the actions of the Department of Justice, they are falling short. And so today I was just going to basically say what a powerful thing it would be if the Department of Justice went after, because we've been covering this. This is all in Why Counties Matter Most. That if the Department of Justice and the president actually pursued a case after the courts. Basically, we already have petition 8. So what we have to do is we got to get petition 8 into the hands of the Department of Justice. Because clearly, the only entity within our government structure, state, federal, county, doesn't matter, are our legislators. They're the ones that create law. They're the only entity with legislative power. The courts have no legislative power. They're only determined whether the suit of the case had merit or not. Yes, this was a violation of the actual provided definition of the Constitution. Or they're to say, this isn't in the Constitution, we have no jurisdiction over it. That's what they're supposed to be doing, but they're not doing that. They've aggrandized themselves to be the oracles of all. They have elevated themselves, and they have the federal court system has created a judiciary form of government, all unconstitutional. It's the same thing. If the president would have created an executive, it would have been a monarchical. But instead of monarchical, it's executive because it's not a bloodline. So anyway, I am going and I'm seething because I'm reading a letter from Attorney General Bondi to Governor Bob Ferguson. This got out into the news this past weekend. And as a matter of fact, I think it hit last week because it was dated August 13th. Now, August 13th to me was Wednesday last week. I finally got wind of it on the 15th because it was going through social media. So it's gotten this far. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read this and I'm going to point out where Attorney General Bondi is failing to actually execute the supreme law of the land. Because she's functioning with the paradigm of the judiciary form of government that the court is the final arbiters and the court has all to say over things. That is incorrect. And as a matter of fact, she is not in the court, nor is she an officer of the court. She is an officer for the Constitution. Okay, so she may be a lawyer and she may have this bar association, but anything that takes her out of that paradigm of the Constitution is taking her out of her office. So let's just take a look, because this is what was stated to Bob Ferguson. Dear Governor Ferguson, the United States has a long history of cooperation with state and local enforcement agencies, state and local enforcement agencies, including for immigration enforcement. Such cooperation is vital to enforce federal law and protect national security. Recognizing that need, Congress has codified the duty of the states and local governments to cooperate in immigration enforcement efforts. Now, nevertheless, even though the federal government doesn't have the enumeration of controlling and managing and regulating immigration, the states actually surrendered that to the federal government unconstitutionally. That's beside the point. The problem is what they are failing to do regarding the people coming across the border. What is immigration? Immigration is when a person chooses to come and start anew in a new country. I want to migrate to that country. So what they have to do, because what the federal government did when they kind of pursued this, because the states were really failing badly, and what the federal government should have done was that, you know, you guys, we're going to help you create a system so we will have a uniform immigration system that you will control. We have no authority to do this, but we have a responsibility of guarding the United States and the boundaries thereof from people that are coming in that shouldn't be coming in. Therefore, we need to create a system where you can notify us so that when that person shows up at a port of entry, we will allow them in to come to your state and only your state because you were the one that sponsored and allowed them to come in. And so, therefore, we have to have a kind of a reporting system and a working system so that we can actually have a good functioning immigration system. Remember, folks, when the Constitution was created, only the states knew what was best for them, and they did not entrust that with the federal government. Therefore, they weren't going to let the federal government tell them that they had to bring in these people. They had the freedom and they had the authority to decide what was best for them in all capacities. This concept of being a sovereign state. The only thing they're not sovereign are for, the things that they have no sovereignty over, are those things delegated to the federal government, which immigration and the importation of persons is not delegated to the federal government. States had that. In 1808, the importation of persons, the federal government was able to regulate or stop the importation of slaves. That was the whole point of Article 1, Section 9, where the federal government had the ability now to regulate, as they thought fit, the importation of certain people. They didn't name the slaves, but everybody knew, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that was all about stopping slavery. Therefore, the federal government has no authority to import people, nor do they have the authority to immigrate. But putting all that aside, they've assumed this authority. The states have kind of let them do it unconstitutionally, and it's still being done unconstitutionally. So we can fix this, and the states have to take this back, along with working with the federal government to create an orderly system of managing immigration, because far be it for this federal government to say, we're going to bring in this many people, and we have to absorb them. Every state should actually be controlling what they're bringing in and how they want to absorb them. If they don't want more people, then they don't have to have more people. But it's up to the states. The states are sovereign over those things. Remember that. Okay. So moving on with this letter. For too long, so-called sanctuary jurisdiction policies have undermined this necessary cooperation and obstructed federal immigration enforcement, giving aliens cover to perpetuate crimes in our communities and evade the immigration consequence that federal law requires. Now, I need to explain this. I need to go into this because I failed to actually cover the fact that those people who didn't come across that boundary, didn't come into this United States with authority, and they just ran in here, the Constitution doesn't refer them as immigrants. They're not undocumented immigrants. They are invaders, right there in Article 1, Section 8. They're called invaders. And in Article 4, Section 4, they're called invaders. And in Article 1, I believe it's Section 10. When you look at Article 1, Section 10, unless actually invaded. So the term invasion is brought in three different forms in the Constitution. These people are invaders. But see, when we actually call them what the Constitution qualifies them as, because immigration is a person that has been authorized to come. If they're not authorized to come, and they come and run across the line, they have invaded. They are trespassing. There's no two ways about this. And therefore, the federal government has one responsibility and one responsibility alone. The Constitution says they must be repelled. There's no thing as DACAs, or we're going to let you guys slide, we're going to give you amnesty. Actually, the federal government does not have the authority to grant amnesty. They have to abide by the supreme law. We'll be right back attuned on this. Stay tuned, folks.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just be clear here. The dangerous person in the room is the person that actually understands the Constitution, because those people who are actually under oath, who are in office, require, legally bound to support, not just do their job, but to support. In other words, if you look at Section 3, because actually I was kind of connecting the dots I started reading. We've got the oath of office, then we have the ability to hold them accountable when our public servants fail to hold themselves accountable. As a matter of fact, the First Amendment and the right of assembling, the right of petitioning. So this right of assembling is actually, it's kind of like the super, you know, the ultra, you know, action that we have to take. Technically, we don't have to necessarily assemble. We can just simply petition government and for the redress of grievances. And if we have a law-abiding government and we have a self-conscientious and cognitive government of understanding the Constitution and willing to uphold it, then our redresses, our grievances would be redressed. But when we have a government that obviates and has subverted and completely perverted the language and the definitions and the Constitution itself, then we actually have to use the assembly and petition government. This means we have to get a consensus of people. I've said this before, and I think I'm going to talk about this tomorrow with Tammy. When we look at the framework of the Constitution, and if we understand the importance, the sacredness in common law of the importance of a trial by jury, in other words, empowering the people to have an ultimate say over the law. The only thing they can't have an ultimate say is to overturn the Constitution. But any law that they think is in pursuance to, but really isn't, they have the ability to overturn, turn it upside down, and nullify it. To say, that is not law. That is the color of law. That is not in pursuant to the Constitution. That is not within the delegated powers. So in other words, folks, we have the ability to hold government accountable. The problem was that they didn't have teeth in what to do when we caught them. That was missing in the Constitution. So they're accountable. They took the oath. They know we can hold them accountable because it's right there in the First Amendment. No. It's not the Article 5 process. That does not hold people accountable, nor is that the process of holding government accountable to the Constitution. The right of assembling and petitioning is, and oh, by the way, the teeth to those who violate their oath. Believe it or not, that's in the Constitution too. And I know every single one of you who hears this show on a regular basis hears me say this. As a matter of fact, here, I just took a selfie, and I don't take selfies, I'm just being sarcastic. My face is dark navy blue. In other words, I've been saying this so much, I am blue in the face. Okay, so all sarcasm aside, when you look at Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, there is no due process. Section 3 is all about moral perjury. You have legally bound yourself to do a very specific thing. If you fail to do that, then you have perjured yourself in that legal oath. Therefore, you have made yourself ineligible to be in office. Because the contingency is that you, while in office, will support that constitution. When I say that constitution, I specifically mean the original text and all amendments. No redefining by the courts. The original text and the original, all the amendments, all of them, even the 13th Amendment, I mean the real 13th Amendment of 1812, those, so we have 28 amendments, and all of them are to be abided by as they were defined in the process of establishing that amendment. Therefore, if you want to change that definition, you need to come back to the states and say, we have a problem with this, there's something missing here. Then the states would have to provide a new amendment to help change, broaden, or define the scope of what that is. Because the only way that constitution becomes malleable, becomes, you know, adjustable, becomes liquefied so that the writer or the potter's clay can be changed or remolded or modified is by the states allowing it, by three-fourths of the states ratifying. That's it. So when we look at Section 3 as an amendment that has been ratified, any person who has been duly bound, legally bound, and by the supreme law of the land, they're required to be legally bound to serve. They can't serve until they are. So if they're serving and they're not legally bound, so in other words, if some, you know, slick reptilian, you know, doublespeak politician says, oh, well, I really didn't take that oath, then you have no business being in office, and they're instantly removed immediately. Because you can't falsely affirm. You have to be bound. The Constitution requires that. It requires this legally binding oath. And oh, by the way, this concept of bonds, that a public servant has to be bonded, that you can go after their bonds. The bonds is about protecting the corporate government, not our constitutional government. The Constitution does not require a person to be bonded. Because the consequences of you failing to do what you did, what we're supposed to do, is a removal of office. In other words, as Section 3 basically states, no person shall be. In other words, if while you're under oath, you failed to support the Constitution, now we have to define and help you understand what that means, you are required to ensure that the Constitution is being complied to. What you do and everybody else does, you are a watcher. We have elected you to be in that inner trust, to watch everybody else, and to hold everybody accountable. We've even given you the power to hold each other accountable. But because you didn't do that for decades, the 14th Amendment was necessary, and this is where the divine hand of providence demanded that there actually be teeth put into that accountability. That when somebody has failed to hold themselves or anybody else accountable, in other words, the honor of thieves is gone, you are to be removed when it has been proven, and we don't have to go to a court of law to prove it. When you have voted for something that is clearly a direct violation, I'll give you a good case in point. Washington State, the state legislature, the entire state legislature of 2023, when the state legislator voted to allow a digital currency to be used in the state of Washington as a legal tender for the payment of debt, then they violated, the entire state legislature violated Article 1, Section 10 by allowing anything other than gold and silver coin to become law in the state. Because they're constrained from that. They're constrained from being allowing any other form of payment for legal tender of payment of debt. Therefore, they all violated. Now, how did they all violate it? Because, you know, there were some that didn't vote for it. Not one of the people that didn't vote for it called these people out as violating their oath and being, they must be removed. In other words, they were giving them aid and comfort by allowing them to maintain their civil position in government. When you understand your requirement to hold everybody accountable, this comes from James Madison. James Madison in the Virginia Resolution says every legislator, because it's all about the legislature and our laws, every legislator is duty bound. Well, the president is equally duty bound, and Pam Bondi is equally bound. Or I should say the Attorney General Bondi is equally bound. If we want to make a shockwave that is going to shake this nation, then what we have to do is we actually have to stand up and end the judicial form of government that has been created by the Bar Association and the lawyers and the League of Lawyers who have had this perversion of soaking the law, soaking our word, and twisting it and redefining it because they don't have that power. I'm currently working on, and I haven't done it yet, but I'm working on an academic article to prove how the Federalist Papers were the poison pill, that how the judiciary used the Federalist Papers to absolutely scare everybody and intimidate them to say they actually had these powers, because they they legitimized the Federalist Papers as a legitimate founding document of the Constitution when it's not. Folks, have you ever heard the expression, "Don't pee on my back and tell me it's raining"? That's what the judiciary had been doing for hundreds of years. They've been peeing on our back and telling us it's raining, because they have no authority in that Constitution to interpret law. They have no authority in that Constitution to redefine the law. They have no authority in that Constitution to create law. That is fully vested in the legislature, in Congress, or in your state legislature, or in your county legislature. In a Republican form of government, it can only be in legislative powers. Oh, but everybody talks, well, what about these citizen initiatives? Technically, your citizen initiatives are violations of the Constitution. And the only reason we're doing it is we're actually using, instead of actually holding them accountable. They knew this accountability thing of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, of holding them accountable. They knew if you understood this and that there would be no due process. Why is there no due process with Section 3? Attorney General Bondi, just so you understand, no person is losing life, liberty, or property. They've made themselves ineligible to be in office because they've proven they can't keep their word. They've perjured themselves, and therefore they are permanently removed for life. Removed immediately, not at the end of their term. They're removed immediately. And so, as I'm going to read through this letter of yours to Governor Bob Ferguson and how you play hokey pokey and footsie wootsies with him, and I'm sorry for coming on, it's a little strong. But we got to stop this. We've got to start using the Constitution as our weapon. We actually have to demand to hold everybody accountable to their oath and to the spirit and the letter of the law. No more of this color of law. Because you bring up criminal lawsuits or possible criminal charges. It doesn't matter. Bob Ferguson has proven himself by creating a sanctuary state. He has deliberately obviated the fact that he's required to repel. The Constitution requires us all to repel. And everybody's been dancing around this fact of, oh, well, this is an immigration problem when it's an invasion. Don't redefine what is happening. Immigration is a very specific process where a person shows up with the authority. They've been granted the approval to come. Everybody else who wants to come here, you're either visiting on a visa, or if that's our law, you can come and you can have a visa. You just got to leave on your own time because we have an honor system going. But if you run across that border and you invade us, you are an invader. And in Petition 3, Attorney General Bondi, I'm going to send you this. You're going to get Petition 3. You tell me how we're wrong. There's no way. It is clear the framers actually talked in the ratification debates about invasion. And it wasn't combatants. They didn't have to be combatants. They understood how Islam had actually wiped out Zoroastrian faith in Persia. They knew how Islam had basically wiped out faiths, cultures, and people. Because it was all by migration. Illegal migration, basically overrunning a country and literally taking it over. And that's what we see today. How many people are here? In Petition 3, we identify that Yale and MIT had studies and they came up with 21 million in 2018. And I'm telling you, they soft-pedaled. They probably weren't counting DACA. They probably weren't counting a lot of people that should have been counted. By that point in time, we were probably somewhere from 30 million going to 40. And today we easily have 50 million. And I'm not even talking about the people that were imported here unconstitutionally by the federal government. Yes, Attorney General Bondi, the federal government cannot bring people here based on refugee status. That is not a delegated power. So where did they get this power? Oh, they signed an unconstitutional treaty to the UN. That unconstitutional treaty is something that they had no authority to affix and adjoin the United States and the states in this union to a foreign entity and apply those laws. That has to be enumerated in the Constitution, because when it says treaties made or which shall be made under their authority, affixes the fact that they cannot make a treaty that is not within their delegated powers. Therefore, they didn't have the power to adjoin to the UN. Therefore, all of those treaties, such as the Refugee Resettlement Treaty in the late 50s, early 60s, all of those treaties are unconstitutional. And this is how the federal government has become a weapon in importing all the wrong people here, bringing enemies into our border. So let's talk about the invaders and let's talk about the refugees. And now how many people are legitimately here constitutionally, or shouldn't be here constitutionally, I should say, or here illegitimately by the graces of the federal government? We're talking probably 80 million. Now, if the last census has us just a little over 300 million, folks. Just a little over 300. Let's say 3.2, 330. We'll do 330. If we have 80 million out of 330, that means that 250 million are legitimate citizens. That means over, because that's 80 into 2. That is basically, because if you take 80 into 240, or 28 into 24, right? That's one out of every three people are here illegitimately. They're not citizens. We have watered ourselves down, and we're destroying our culture. We're destroying this nation, because the federal government has become an enemy to the Constitution. And I mean that. When I say the federal government, I mean players, the party, the communists, the globalists have bought their way into owning people who've been willing to compromise and do their bidding. God bless the Constitution. And people, we need to start sanctifying this Constitution, and we need to start fasting and praying and hoping that everybody starts getting this really quick, that the Constitution is the solution. The Constitution has the ability to actually get rid of all of these things, because they were never done legitimately. The only way it can be legitimate in any form is it has to be amended and delegated. So therefore, let me get back to this letter. Under President Trump's leadership, full cooperation by state and local governments in immigration enforcement efforts is a top priority. To ensure such cooperation, the president has directed the Attorney General of the United States, that's you, Attorney General Bondi, in coordination with the Secretary of the Homeland Security, an office that's not constitutional, but anyway, it is what it is, to identify sanctuary jurisdictions and to notify them, because sanctuary means unconstitutional. In other words, we're not going to abide by the Constitution. Everybody is required to repel invaders. Remember, we've constitutionally clarified that these people here are invaders. They're not immigrants. They're invaders, which means the Constitution says one thing and one thing alone: repel. They must be taken out, must be driven out. And over the century plus, since the federal government has taken over immigration, they've constantly softballed and redefined and redefined and redefined. Anyway, in coordination with the Secretary of Homeland Security to identify sanctuary jurisdictions and notify them of their unlawful sanctuary status, unconstitutional sanctuary status and potential violations of federal law. But violations of the Constitution. Let's be very clear, because federal law is wrong. The Constitution is not wrong. Additionally, the president directed federal agencies to identify and evaluate their statutory authority to issue grants, contracts, and federal funds to determine whether immigration-related terms and conditions may be added to combat sanctuary policies. You don't even need to do that. Every public servant who has taken an oath that has made the assertion that this is a sanctuary city, a sanctuary state. They have voted for it. They are on record. They have proven themselves ineligible to be in office. And it is your job, Attorney General Bondi, to go and have every single one of these people removed and basically put the states in an order of emergency to where the people, where the state, because what happens? The state legislature takes control. And, oh, by the way, we need to put the state legislature on notice to say, if you even consider stepping out of the bounds of your oath of office of supporting the Constitution, we will remove you too and we'll put the whole state in a state of emergency. Now, technically, you cannot, you, the federal government, cannot declare a state of emergency because you don't have the federal militia. What you have created is an unconstitutional Department of Defense and a standing army, a standing Air Force, and all sorts of other standing armies as enforcement agencies. The Constitution only grants you the ability for Congress to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. So bottom line, you have the authority to come in and remove these people, but you cannot declare martial law. And actually what needs to happen is the state, the counties of the state, because they are the prime authority over the state, the counties of the state need to actually go into emergency orders where the sheriffs basically declare, because the sheriffs still have that authority, and they need to start operating a militia instead of a sheriff's office with a bunch of mercenaries. Folks, I'm telling you, the Constitution is beautiful, it is clear, and it actually gives us everything we need to do to actually put everything in order. The real problem, the only problem that we have to deal with during this state of emergency, is we the people need to start working on setting up our county constitutions. This is where we will now grant our county, we'll actually finally take responsibility of our own government, because the county is our government. That is the only government we the people create. The county creates the state, and the states create the federal. The state is being, or I should say, the federal is overwatched by the state legislature, and the state is overwatched by the county legislatures. So we the people should be watching our county. This is why our county is our primary interface. So I'm hoping that this is all making sense, but let me move on. Additionally, so he's talked about these executive orders protecting American communities from criminal aliens. That's nice, but he's responsible of repelling all invaders, not just criminals, all invaders. So the executive order designation as a sanctuary jurisdiction may result in additional consequences and further agency actions as permitted by law. As the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, I am committed to identifying state and local law policies and practices that facilitate violations of federal immigration laws. Let me be clear. If those laws are not in pursuant to the Constitution in removing invaders, repelling them, then they are color of law. Because the federal government has been doing this and they've been assuming all sorts of powers, whether you like it or not, but that's okay. The states have the authority to do this. So let me just kind of wrap this up because I'm looking, I got 5 minutes here. And we'll have to go into Friday as well, unfortunately. But this letter is a piece of work. Policies or practices, such laws, policies or practices. Individuals operating under the color of law, just like the federal government is, using their official position to obstruct federal immigration enforcement efforts. If that enforcement effort is nothing but repelling, it's, separating wheat from the chaff and allowing some to stay. No, all must be repelled. Facilitating and inducing illegal immigration may be subject to criminal charges. Listen to this, Secretary General Bondi. We don't want criminal charges first. We want them removed first. They're, as long as they're in office, they are going to fight and do bad things, and they are killing us. We've got to get these enemies of the Constitution out of office. Then we can try them for treason. We can try them for any crime you want to. But the supreme law of the land demands they be removed. The supreme law of the land states that they are no longer eligible to be in office, and that's right there in Section 3, and they're to be banned for life. And the only way that that banishment can be removed is two-thirds of Congress. Now, let me say this. Once we actually start cleaning up, and we even clean up Congress, yes, you can clean up Congress, Attorney General Bondi. You have the power to start removing, you know, AOC and all of these idiots that are running their own insurgency against the Constitution. Start protecting America. And if, but this is the point. If you undo the unconstitutional laws that came out of the federal courts, especially the one-person, one-vote ruling from the Warren Court, where the federal court backhanded the states and said, you no longer have a right to form your Republican forms of government. We're forcing you into a democracy. That right there was a direct violation of the Constitution. It was egregious overreach from the court, and it has done nothing but bad ramifications. If Trump understands this one thing, if President Trump understands this one thing, and if you, Attorney General, understand this one thing, allowing the states to go back to their county their county districts or their county structure of their political government, it would force every state in the union to be either purple, if not red, because every blue state would turn purple. Because there's more red counties than there are blue. And so giving the advantage by the Supreme Court through this Warren Court, one person, one vote ruling, they literally created a democracy to allow the population centers to destroy us. And they haven't been able to get away with this fast enough. Why counties matter most gives you the entire academic argument of how this was all done unconstitutionally. I'm pleading to the audience that we need to shake the tree. We, the people, need to demand compliance to our Constitution. And I truly believe that if Trump actually, if he fathoms what this would do, it would restore our political system to one that is better protected from the onslaught of democracy and these evils. We could actually start purging and moving America in the right direction. The question is, are you on board with supporting the Constitution? Are you on board with just limiting yourself within the color of law that you like the shades of your color over other people's shades? We the people like the color of parchment. We want the parchment of law. We want the true and the real law to be enforced and to be recognized, not redefined. If it's a question of what it means, it goes to the states. It doesn't go to Congress. It doesn't go anywhere else because Congress is oblivious to what the true definitions are. And if you want to know how to do all of this, I'm more than happy. I am your public servant. I'm here. And I'm not here for government purposes. I am actually here to help. As I always say, hi, I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government. So with that, as we perfectly segue into the ending, we have to hard stance, hold people accountable. We have to do this, folks. And this is why we're going to go into Friday, and I'm going to basically, you know, get back to those 3 points and the accountability, getting into taking back these counties. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.